You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
A U.S.-owned cargo ship survives a Houthi rebel missile attack. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne, and a very good morning to you. The Houthi rebels in Yemen have claimed responsibility for another attack on a U.S.-owned cargo ship off the south coast of Yemen. Iranian-backed Houthis have been attacking ships since November in protest at Israel's war against Hamas. No one was injured in the attack and the ship has carried on into port. This appears to be the first American-owned ship to be hit since the US and Britain naval forces in the region launched airstrikes against Houthis on Friday. Jacob Larson is head of maritime safety and security at BIMCO, an organisation which represents ship owners globally.
These ships are international ships. It's very much the same way if you attack a bus with 20 people and there's one or two Israelis. That doesn't mean that it's an Israeli bus. And it's really the same, you could say, about the situation now in the Red Sea.
That was Jacob Larson from BIMCO. The conflict in Gaza is also affecting neighbouring countries. Lebanon's economy has been hit hard by the war between Israel and Hamas. The BBC's Hannah McCarthy reports from Beirut.
We start in the Middle East, where security forces in southern Israel have moved to a war footing to combat a surprise attack by the Palestinian militant group Hamas.
When the war between Israel and Hamas began on the 7th of October, it quickly spread to southern Lebanon, where Hezbollah, an Iran-backed ally of Hamas, began exchanging fire with Israeli forces along the blue line that separates the two countries.
The war is happening in Gaza, but it's also happening in Lebanon. This is something sometimes people forget or is not very covered in the news.
Joseph Saej had only just opened Levant, a store specializing in Lebanese baked goods in Beirut a few weeks before the war began.
I lived 10 years in Paris and I got back to Beirut 6 months ago.
Since October, tens of thousands of people have fled their homes in southern Lebanon, and many countries have advised their citizens against travelling to Lebanon, with several airlines cutting their flights to Beirut.
All the foreigners that were in Beirut, be it the tourists or the ones who were living here, expats or volunteers with NGOs, they left within days.
The lack of flights and foreign visitors hit vital tourist revenues, says Sami Zughaib, an economist at the Policy Initiative in Beirut.
If we had assumed a tourist revenue similar to what we had last year, for example, of around $1,500 per passenger, we're looking at something closer to around $300 million in losses, only from the tourist revenues.
He says that fewer flights and visitors have also reduced the flow of foreign currency into Lebanon, which has a cash-based economy after its banking sector collapsed.
Lebanon also imports cash, and much of this cash that was being shipped through the airport.
During the first month of the war, the Lebanese restaurant sector experienced an 80% drop in business, hitting owners like Joseph Saej hard.
Sales went down. Coming back here, I knew that at some point, eventually something would happen. Didn't expect that it would be that big and it would be that quick, actually.
The holiday season drew some Lebanese expats back from abroad, bringing with them fresh dollars and euros. I spoke to Danny Boumaroun, a Lebanese-American music producer, about how the holiday season had felt in Beirut this year.
Things are starting to feel a bit normal. Beirut is pretty busy, but not nearly as much as usual. This year it feels off. Obviously, things are uncertain and no one knows what's going to happen.
Maya Aoun from the syndicate that represents restaurant owners in Lebanon says that the hospitality sector is determined to keep its doors open.
The restaurant sector has always been one of these sectors that were like really behind the economy in Lebanon.
She says they'll keep operating as the Hamas-Israel war continues with no end in sight. I'm the BBC's Hannah McCarthy for Marketplace.
OK, let's do the numbers. European stocks open lower following hawkish central bank comments that suggest rate cuts might not be coming anytime soon. Meanwhile, Japanese stocks broke its eighth session winning streak, with the TOPIX closing down 0.8%. Google's pulled some major crypto exchanges, including Binance and Kraken, from its Play Store in India. The move comes 2 weeks after India's financial watchdog said the platforms were operating illegally there. The BBC's Archana Shukla can tell us what's led to the ban. Hi there.
Hi.
So Apple already, they took crypto exchange apps from stores in India too. The big question is, why are these big tech companies doing this?
Well, they're doing this on instructions of the Indian government, who has a concern that these major offshore crypto exchanges are possibly not compliant with anti-money laundering laws in India. And the government's concern is that millions of Indian cryptocurrency traders are using these offshore platforms to evade taxes. So late in December, the Financial Intelligence Unit of the federal government, they questioned almost 9 such firms on their registration and compliance. And since last week, first their websites were blocked, then the Apple Store was asked to remove the apps, and now even Google Play Store has blocked these apps.
Presumably, users of cryptocurrency exchanges aren't happy with this. Has there been any reaction?
They don't really have much say in this matter at the moment, because if you know, the cryptocurrency environment globally also suffers from some bit of a regulatory vacuum, and which was the case in India as well. So initially, when there was very limited regulatory oversight, there was a boom in cryptocurrency trading in India, with over 100 million traders now currently in India who are trading in these digital virtual assets. So the government in the last 2 years has started tightening that regulations. Initially, they imposed heavy taxation on both crypto trading as well as profits on trading of crypto assets. And that kind of affected the entire section of the traders who are dealing in these crypto assets in India, most of who decided to move away from domestic platforms to offshore platforms like Binance and Kraken. And in the last 2 to 3 years, we had seen a significant jump in the business of these offshore platforms. Now we are seeing a lot of the crypto deposits and digital virtual assets moving back to domestic platforms like WazirX in India.
Archana Shukla, thank you so much for joining us on Marketplace.
Thank you.
And finally, the charity Oxfam has predicted that the world could have its first trillionaire within the next decade. I'm Leanna Byrne with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.